This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Monica Brain. Immigration is a big issue in this year's midterm election. The border wall, separating immigrant families, and reforming the visa system are some of the issues that have politicians taking sides. But Congress has accomplished little on immigration reform, and the fate of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program is still uncertain. Is immigration a major election issue for you? Do you feel you've heard enough on immigration from the candidates? That's our conversation today. Give us a call and share your thoughts. Everyone is welcome to weigh in. The number is 277-5866. Or tweet us using the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. And joining us now on the line from Las Cruces is Angela Cocherga. She is the Southern New Mexico border reporter for the Albuquerque Journal. Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico, Angela.
Thank you, Monica. Good morning.
Good morning. What are some of the major issues that you've been covering at the border?
Well, much of my time, especially over the summer, was the whole family separation, the zero tolerance crackdown that meant parents who were prosecuted and sent to jail and then detention centers had to be separated from the kids, and the kids were sent to shelters run by Health and Human Services. So a real outcry from the public after some of the images, some of the voices of these very tiny children, in some cases crying and upset, were released to the public. We also have right down the road from here in southern New Mexico and West Texas, a big tent camp that's been set up to hold juveniles, older children, teenagers, who either came alone, unaccompanied, or a few were held there while their parents were detained. So that's just been expanded. So that issue's not going away. And, of course, the very big campaign promise of the big, beautiful border wall by then-candidate and now President Trump, our area of New Mexico, southern New Mexico, the first stretch of what's being called a wall, began this earlier this year. Now, it's important to point out that it's an extension of the existing steel bollard fence. It's nothing like what most people think of as a wall. So it's really an expansion of existing infrastructure, but it's been relabeled a wall. So those are some of the big issues.
And is the Trump administration saying that that what was built is part of his quote-unquote wall project?
He is, and the Border Patrol, which a few weeks before had been calling that same structure, which exists, it's right near the sanitary support of entry to give people a sense of the busiest port of entry for New Mexico, that border crossing, right along that desert area where there were some open areas, some open stretches. There were not totally open, but what's called vehicle fencing, which means people could walk through there. That's now being kind of closed off and expanded. But it's literally the same fencing, very strong steel, tall fencing, but you can see through it that exists. So it's part of an infrastructure project upgrade that was already planned, and not the border wall per se that most people think of, and definitely not funded by Congress. This is part of the existing Department of Homeland Security infrastructure improvement.
Okay, gotcha. Well, give us an update on the separation of families at the border. Is that still happening? Are you seeing that?
No, that stopped because of that backlash. President Trump put out an executive order basically stopping his own administration's policy and halting that, and then became the big task ordered by a federal judge to reunite these parents with those children. And many were reunited. We saw those children given back to their parents, but others were not. Their parents had been deported, about 400 parents, and so the kids were still here and trying to find other family members, foster care, or places where they could go. If not, the goal is not to keep them in shelters, but some have stayed in those shelters for a while. And of course, the kids who came on their own or who were separated and their parents deported, some of them are still going to that tent facility because basically there were so many, they had to make room for the tiny children, so they decided to put the older children in that temporary facility down the road. So for now, the separations have stopped, but there is this hint or maybe this looming threat on the part of the administration that they could restart, especially as this giant caravan of Honduran immigrants tries to make its way up to the border.
Today on Let's Talk New Mexico, we are talking about immigration, the issue of immigration, and the election. Do you follow the news coverage of families being separated at the border this year? And is that a key issue for you to decide who you're voting for in November? Give us a call. The number is 277-5866 or 505-277-5866. We're talking with Angela Cocherga. She is the Southern New Mexico border reporter for the Albuquerque Journal. You mentioned this tent city in Texas with detained immigrants. What do you hear from folks in the area about how they feel about this being, you know, right where they live?
Well, immediately after the facility, the tents were put up by a private contractor paid for by the U.S. government, Health and Human Services, it became a flashpoint for lots of protests. It happened right before Father's Day, so there's a massive protest. Families who live in the area, people from around the area. But then numerous protests organized by different groups, including I've seen people from all over New Mexico come down, including Albuquerque, to protest and upset about young teenagers being held in tents. And really, the problem is there is no plan to deal with this kind of migration of families, mass migration of families. The system is set up to deal with single men, mostly used to be from Mexico, coming up to work. That has ended and has ended for quite a while. And there really is no idea of how there's to deal with not just labor, but families coming, fleeing violence, seeking asylum. These aren't people who are running away from Border Patrol. They are turning themselves in and asking for asylum. The same, they're showing up at border crossings and ports of entry, legal crossings, to ask for asylum. So court systems are clogged. There's nowhere to house families, and many are set free. And the children are held in shelters if they're separated back then, or teenagers are unaccompanied, have to be, held in some sort of shelter while they figure out their immigration cases. Now, the people who are released, I know there's this whole idea of catch and release. They are fitted, most of them, the majority, with these ankle tracking devices to keep track of where they are while their cases go through the courts.
And I know that you're following the Congressional District 2 race. Has immigration become a big issue, a big discussion in that race?
It has. It's hard not to, you know, given the giant Southern District 2 race includes this big section of border, which is the entire New Mexico border. So, but the candidates have very, very different perspectives on how they'd handle this issue. If you look at the Albuquerque Journal, we put out questionnaires to the candidates when they were running the primaries and later asked them in various stories about their immigration views and policies. And you will see that on the border wall, the Republican Yvette Herrill is very much in favor of it. And when it comes to DACA, she questions whether that anyone should be given amnesty, no matter how they came into the U.S., which DACA, of course, is for young children who were brought in by their parents illegally crossing the border. So she is, as she puts it, very much in favor of the tough policies promoted by President Trump to secure the border. Now, Xochitl Torres-Small, she says she wants a more pragmatic approach. The wall is not the answer. There needs to be, more technology and a visa work program that would really help people who are coming to take jobs or being offered jobs by different agriculture, service industry jobs that can't be filled to allow them to come in legally and for us to know who's coming in. So she's more in favor of a immigration reform, but looking at those work permits.
Have they had a debate yet?
Well, they've had very few. There was supposed to be one on an Albuquerque television station. Yvette Herrill said for scheduling reasons she could not participate. They've had a couple of public forums, one in Deming, one in eastern New Mexico, in Carlsbad, but really not many opportunities for the whole state to see these two candidates debate on air, on television. So limited interaction between the two. Yvette Herrill said she didn't want to do that one in Albuquerque because most of her voters in southern New Mexico couldn't see. But of course, online you can watch some of this.
Mm. Are you hearing from folks about, whether or not immigration is influencing their choices in the election?
Well, I was out talking to voters. You may know Doñana County leads the state in terms of early voting numbers. So a lot of people out there early casting ballots, even with the one polling place open. There'll be many more opened over the weekend. But the first polling place, the government, Doñana County government, center, and it was a steady stream of people. So I was asking them about, you know, what's getting people out early and unsolicited. Several said immigration is an issue. In particular, they brought up the family separations, very upset about that and not in favor of that kind of harsh tactic. Of course, there are other people who favor the wall and want, I didn't hear from any yesterday, but there are other parts of southern New Mexico where people feel that they, in remote areas, they may want a barrier. And we did a poll, the Albuquerque Journal, asking people about some of these immigration issues. The vast majority of New Mexicans do not want a wall, but if you break it out by party, you see far more Democrats are against it. And Republicans, some of them think fairly sizable number that this is something that would help stop illegal immigration. So kind of that divide, you will see it along party lines, even though most people in New Mexico don't think a wall is a good idea.
All right. Angela, thanks for sharing that. Hang out. We're going to talk some more about the election and immigration issues. And now's your time to get in on this conversation as well, 277-5866. What do you think about what immigration issues are you following? What are big key issues for you? The border wall, family separation, DACA. Give us a call and share. We want to hear from you. 277-5866. Let's go to a caller. We've got Glenn in Hemis Springs. Hey there, Glenn.
Hello. Thank you so much for having this issue. It's so important. Yeah, I think justice is the issue here. We are signatories to international law that says we need to honor refugees, and under the Trump administration, that is not being done. I am a former Lutheran minister, and the National Council of Churches is pushing the administration to up their numbers of allowing refugees, which most of the Central Americans will qualify for, given the conditions down there that we created under Reagan. And the Trump administration wants to go down to 30,000 refugees allowed into this country. The National Council of Churches says that number needs to be up to 75,000, which is so much less than what Germany and other countries in Europe have allowed. We supposedly are the richest country in the world, and at least in the Christian tradition, welcome the stranger has been an issue for generations. And for me and my family and everybody I know are mainly Democrats or independents, we're not voting for any Republicans or consistently anti-immigrant. And so there's my comment. Thank you.
Thanks, Glenn. We appreciate it. Again, 277-5866. Let's add some more voices to this conversation. Joining us here in the studio is Rebecca Kitson. She's a local immigration lawyer and adjunct professor at the University of New Mexico School of Law. Hey there, Rebecca.
Hi there. Good morning.
Also, we have Miriam Aranjani. She is the Lee and Leon Karolitz Professor of Law at UNM. Hey there, Miriam.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And in the studio, we have Christine Sierra. She is a professor emerita at the Political Science Department at the University of New Mexico. Welcome, Christine.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation to be here.
UNM represent today. Rebecca, let's start with you. We're talking a little bit about asylum, and I'm just curious if you could share a little bit about some of the policy changes that have been going on this year related to asylum.
Yes, I think that there has been a great shift in our country's perspective towards asylum under the current administration. We have seen changes in case law. In particular, our Attorney General has certified cases relating to domestic violence and asylum seekers to himself in order to change the course of case law in the United States. So on the legal level, we've seen a shift towards tightening the definition of asylum and limiting asylum for specific groups and in particular for specific countries. In addition to that, we've seen processing changes that make it much more difficult for those who are seeking asylum to do so successfully by expediting cases, moving them much more rapidly through the system. As was previously discussed, the detention policies, separation of families, it really pressures people to give up their due process rights in moving forward with an asylum claim. Detention has a huge effect on individuals who are terrified to return to their home country, but under the pressures of detention, it's difficult to make clear decisions about their future. So we've seen a lot of shift towards making asylum much more difficult in this country than it has been in the past.
I mean, do you think that's a key election issue, though?
I think that it's a key election issue with the backdrop of the family separation policy in this throughout the summer that we saw, because those people were predominantly asylum seekers. And so I think it really brought the issue to the forefront, and there was a lot of discussion. It was part of the general public discourse and consciousness in the country.
Well, today we are talking about immigration and the election. Do you know somebody, or are you yourself applying for asylum? And what do you think about discussions going on during the election with politicians over this issue of asylum? Give us a call, 277-5866. We're going to go to a short break. We'll be right back.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated Native American law, criminal defense, wrongful death, and civil rights in New Mexico and nationwide. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
Vessel Health and Dr. Harvey White support KUNM. Vessel Health offers personalized evaluations, medical services, and lifestyle solutions focused on prevention and long-term cardiovascular health. Treat the system, not the symptom. VesselNM.com.
A few years ago, composer Osvaldo Golijov was in Israel and saw the effects of a wave of violence. Shortly after that, he was serenely observing our entire planet in a planetarium show. Music inspired by contrasting perspectives on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
You are listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. I'm Monica Brain. We're talking about immigration and the border today. Border walls, separation of families at the border, asylum seekers are all hot topics in this midterm election. What do you hear from the candidates? When you hear from the candidates, is immigration at the top of your list? All opinions are welcome. Give us a call. The number is 277-5866. In the studio, we have Christine Sierra. She is Professor Emerita of Political Science Department at University of New Mexico. Christine, before the break, we were talking a little bit about asylum, but also about other immigration topics and how it relates to the election. So do you think that this particular midterm election, immigration is a key issue?
Oh, absolutely. It's an issue. It's an issue across the country. It's an issue in New Mexico. But it takes different shapes and forms and tones and substance. I would just point out that in our own congressional races, and we've already spoken about the CD2, Congressional District 2, where immigration, particularly a Trump agenda, is embraced by the Republican candidate, and the Democratic candidate is not embracing those policies. But beyond that, we've had a discussion about immigration issues in Congressional District 1, and we will see various parts of it. But let me point out that I want to make a couple of points, that the national discourse on immigration politics, as we probably understand it, is very negative. It is very highly, the tone is highly restrictionist, exclusivist, criminalizing immigrants and refugees. And that comes from the top. That comes from a presidential administration that wants to wholeheartedly change the direction of our immigration law system and our immigration process, particularly from the era of 1965 and the Immigration Nationality Act, where, in general, our country was looking more forward-looking in terms of inclusion and integration of people. It's a very different situation now, and we as New Mexicans get kind of embroiled in that. But I will also add quickly that our tone and substance on immigration issues in New Mexico is different from other states and regions.
How so?
We are not as virulently anti-immigrant as some other places. And I would point out, for example, some candidates. For example, the one who is running has run for governor of Georgia, who proudly has a TV ad saying that in his pickup truck he's going to use it to round up illegals and deport them. Or in Indiana or other places like in Texas, where the anti-immigrant message is very clear and very aggressive. In New Mexico, we don't hear that kind of tone, although we do have some differences between the parties and the candidates.
Let's take some calls. You can get in on this conversation. Number is 277-5866. Let's hear from John in the South Valley. Hey there, John.
Hi.
Hi.
Look, I will gladly sit on the border, and as a sniper in Vietnam, I will not accept people illegally coming in. I mean, look at what it's causing. I mean, listening to all your conversations, you have no what else do we do? How much? You cannot offer anybody here in the South Valley any help. I see people walking around the streets. I try to help them. I give them a few bucks. But, you know, you're not taking care of us. We are the you know, this is us.
So you're saying people that already are here in the United States, that should be the focus. Is that what I'm understanding you saying?
No. I say, you know, take out everybody that can be taken out and ship them south of the border.
All right, John, thanks for giving us a call from the South Valley. What do you think about that? Give us a call, 277-5866. Also in the studio, we have Rebecca Kitson. She is a local immigration lawyer. And Rebecca, you know, the threads of what John was sharing are the foundation of some of these arguments about issues around immigration, which is that that it is illegal to come into this country, you know, without papers and things like that. What do you say to folks who are arguing about that, particularly when we think about this as an election issue?
Well, I think that it's a complex issue, of course. And the immigration system that we currently have is an amazing labyrinth. It does not allow for many venues to legally immigrate to the United States. As my colleague Christine was stating, there are the perspective in the immigration law that's written into the statute is very restrictionist. It basically limits everyone, with very few exceptions, to being able to enter the United States lawfully. That said, there are a number of pull factors inside the United States, being safety, employment, other things that draw people in regardless of what the law says. So there are many different dynamics there. I think that in particular, it goes back to a fundamental question of who we are as Americans and what we believe in. Do we believe that the United States is a refuge indeed for those who are subject to persecution in other parts of the world? Do we see ourselves as a nation of immigrants? Are these things important to us? And if that's the case, then you know, I think that we need to have a legal system that reflects those values appropriately and allows for avenues for people to lawfully immigrate to the United States. That simply is not the case at this point in time. I think many high-tech companies, large corporations in the United States who have supported the DACA program and the H-1B visa program and other avenues will also tell you that foreign workers, in particular professional workers, are incredibly important and supportive in the United States. Bringing the best and the brightest of the world to the United States is not going to be possible if we continue to have a militarized and restrictionist perspective such as one that was just described.
And Miriam, I want to, you know, you work with law students who are considering becoming immigration lawyers. The questions that Rebecca brought up of do we want this? Is this the kind of society that we want? Or these sorts of questions? Are the students asking themselves these questions as they sort of go through deciding to be immigration lawyers?
I think they are, and you know, I would have a comment. I echo the idea that we have a very complicated system at the moment. But what I would just add to callers like John, And those who really, you know, deserve the support and resources that they need, especially those who have served our countries, that it's not mutually exclusive. It's not like we can't have a system of immigration that makes sense, but also work on domestic policy and improve, you know, education and resources for veterans and other people. I really don't think they're mutually exclusive. So, yeah, I do see students understanding that fact. And I also am enthused by their level of engagement in this topic and their interest in the topic and interest in learning more about the topic.
Let's take some more calls. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on what we're talking about today, give us a call. The number is 277-5866. And what do you think? Do you think the candidates are prioritizing immigration issues enough in this election? Why or why not? And why is immigration an important issue to you in this election? Again, it's 277-5866. You could also tweet us at KUNM and use the hashtag Let's Talk NM. Let's go to Martin in Glorieta. Hey there, Martin.
Yes. I was a Peace Corps volunteer for 4.5 years in Guatemala. And I find that the present immigration surge is really an issue of chasing the economy. Now, to expand on what the prior caller stated, one problem with the present immigration law is that it favors the immigrants that comes from rich families from those countries, and in doing so, it takes the best from those countries and does not allow those countries to develop well enough, because we're taking their engineers, their doctors, all their best. But they are from rich families, because poor families cannot afford to educate their children to that level. But we in this country need normal, everyday workers also, not just doctors and engineers. We need janitors. We need field workers. We need people to come in and do the service work that our children don't want and can do but don't want. My children want to be owners of McDonald's, not be a hamburger flipper.
Martin, let me ask you this. Is any of this influencing the way that you are going to vote this year? Or are you hearing from candidates on this particular thing that you're talking about?
Yes. Part of the problem that is occurring with the present elections is it's coming up as an issue. And I am going to favor those that want some reform of immigration. I do admit that we can't just have wide open borders. But none of the candidates have yet to present a good solution to the immigration situation. None of them are stressing the item I just mentioned earlier, that our present law favors the rich of those countries. And the other issue that comes up is just to flat allow people to come in and stay is not a workable solution. All it does is draw more.
All right. Martin, thanks for giving us a call from Glorieta. We appreciate it. Rebecca, any response to, you know, since you're working, you know, directly with folks who are coming here?
Yes, I would say that it is true that our system does favor, you know, more highly skilled workers or those who are some of the top of their field. I think that privilege and resources is something that puts individuals above others across the world. It's almost a universal thing. However, we do have a need for additional workers in the United States, especially those who are filling the jobs that he described. There is not a current system that functions at all to be able to feed those jobs. I've spoken with many employers and entrepreneurs in our state who are looking to fill those jobs and who really struggle with being able to maintain a workforce, or a workforce that shows up and works hard and diligently and stays with the company for a period of time. So I think it is definitely an issue within our state. And I do think it's important that we look beyond the sort of anti-messages that we get really from both sides of the aisle and look towards more of a creative solution to building an immigration system that works in the future.
All right. And Christine, go ahead.
Well, we've implied this before or maybe stated it, but the connection between legal immigration and illegal immigration is very close and tight in the sense that the fewer opportunities we have for legal immigration or the more bogged down the process is for immigrating legally, like a 20-year or 25-year wait standing in line to get your papers, feeds the desperation and the concern that families have for coming into the United States for whatever reason. So the more we offer options for legal immigration, legal entry, I think is a very important part that doesn't get really expressed in candidate speeches mm-hmm. and sound bites.
I mean, I do think that there are some candidates and a growing opinion in this country that there shouldn't be any immigration, that any kind of immigration to this country, that we have the people that we have here and no one else should be coming in.
Well, that's certainly the Trump administration has made it very clear that as they attack illegal immigration and illegal entry, they are also going to try to change wholeheartedly the legal immigration system. And they've already done that, as we've discussed, in reducing the number of refugees that we will entertain or accept. But they're also looking at different other avenues, policy avenues that I think are very, very dangerous and really go against longstanding American values, like protecting birthright citizenship, embracing family reunification or family unification, family migration. We can't just have it as a work-only merit system, the so-called merit system. Yes, work avenues to come to work in the United States, whether it's temporary or permanent, are really important. But changing a whole system, turning it on its head, that's part of this administration's policy proposal.
Well, let's take some more calls. We've got Geraldo in Albuquerque on the line. Hey there, Geraldo.
Hello.
Hi. What would you like to share today?
Well, you know, myself, I was an immigrant, and I came here when I was 10. Now I'm 37. You know, my mother was illegal. You know, just in general, how difficult it is to become legal. You know, when I graduated from high school, I had a scholarship, couldn't take it because it was illegal. I couldn't go to the military. I wanted to go because I couldn't do it because I was illegal. The only way for me to become legal is either to get married, which, you know, thank God I did, and I've been with my wife for many years now. But with this immigration that I have, you know, they make it to where people is coming illegally, and there's no other way to come here. I mean, if there was a revenue or a way for me to say, hey, you know what, I want to come here legally, there's not.
Mm-hmm.
So it is difficult. And, you know, what are the options when people are suffering, like you said, out there, are fearing for their lives or moving or you know, seeking asylum? It's not, there's no way but to come here illegally.
Yeah. Geraldo, thanks for giving us a call from Albuquerque. We really appreciate it. And let's take one more. We've got Don in Albuquerque. Hey there, Don.
Yes, I strongly support full human rights for all immigrants. And many immigrants flee here from war, persecution, severe poverty, caused largely by the United States. Since 1950, the U.S. government, under both Republican and Democratic presidents, has overthrown 50 governments, many of them democracies, has bombed about 30 countries, murdered millions of people. The U.S. government routinely, deliberately sides with the filthy rich abroad to rob and oppress the poor. And many immigrants would prefer to stay in their native lands if living conditions there greatly improved.
Don, thanks for giving us a call. Miriam, Don brought up an interesting thing. He brought up the phrase human rights. Mm-hmm. And I know you're a constitutional lawyer. Is there an intersection between, you know, the Constitution and what we're talking about today?
There is. You know, under our Constitution, under the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause, it says no person shall be denied equal protection of the law. It doesn't say no citizen. says no person. And so there are some, you know, there's the general presumption is that at least under the Equal Protection Clause, that immigrants, regardless of legal status, have the right to be treated equally. Now, the Supreme Court has put some limitations on that over time and has used a lower standard of scrutiny in some contexts. But the general presumption is that strict scrutiny applies to any kind of discrimination against non-citizens.
You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico. We're talking about the connection between the immigration debate and this year's election. Give us a call if you've got something you want to share. 277-5866. Let's go to a quick call. We've got Nick in Albuquerque. Hey there, Nick.
Hi. I wanted to bring up something because the state has a large Native American population and has seen many waves of immigrants, the first of which was 500 some years ago. How does the Native American vote weigh into all this as far as, you know, an anti-immigrant sentiment?
Yeah, that's a good question, Nick. As a member of a tribe in Montana, I guess I'll take the answer to this question. I know that there's a record number of Native candidates running for office this year, but in terms of the immigration debate, I've heard across the board, you know, it's pretty much folks with the rest of the population. Some are not in favor of more immigration and some believe, you know, that that a lot of folks who are crossing the border are also indigenous and need support. And so it's definitely an interesting topic to discuss. Let's go to a short break. And after the break, we'll talk more about immigration and the election.
Program support comes from Listen Up, New Mexico's resource for hi-fi, home theater, and smart home systems since 1972. Located at 6916 Montgomery Boulevard Northeast or online at listenup.com.
The Southwest ADA Center is reminding individuals who have a disability or think they have a disability and need accommodations in school or the workplace that there are resources available to help them succeed. Learn more at southwestada.org. A message from the tax-exempt Southwest ADA Center.
Time of year when high school seniors are starting to apply for college. Almost every school requires some type of essay to go along with the application. Writing about challenges or accomplishments can be hard. On the next Native America Calling, we'll talk with experts about how to get all the best words in order to win.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
You've been listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. There's still time to get in on the conversation. Are you hearing what you want to hear on about immigration from the candidates this year? What would you like to see Congress push? Would you like to see Congress push through some type of immigration reform? And what about DACA? Call us right now, 277-5866. Christine Sierra is with us. She's a professor emerita in the political science department at the University of New Mexico. Before the break, you were wanting to share something?
I wanted to comment on Native communities, and let's bring this discussion to the border, to the actual physical presence of communities on both sides of the U.S.-Mexico border, for that matter, for U.S.-Canada. But Tohono O'odham people are in southern Arizona, and they are fighting the encroachment of the federal government in terms of a wall, in because they need to have smoother access and easier access on both sides of the border to attend to their contiguous and connected communities, and so seeing the connectedness among border communities gets absolutely lost in this debate. So the damage that we're going to do to the environment, the connections of one space to another in terms of animal crossings and preservation of land, the connection of cross-border traffic in terms of commerce, family reunification or families going back and forth. These are the things that affect border communities. Tohono O'odham has taken a stand, but so have people in El Paso, people in other parts of the United States on this U.S.-Mexico border. So the connectedness, the connectivity of our communities is not attended to properly with this kind of restrictionist, build a wall mentality.
You know, President Trump tweeted just this morning that he'd call the U.S. military to close the U.S.-Mexico border if Mexico doesn't stop the flow of immigrants to the U.S. And I'm curious, Christine, if you can add any sort of, is there any historical context to a comment like this? Like, you know, can we put some perspective into this, particularly when we think about, are there past elections where presidents have said similar things?
Well, a past election that says similar things doesn't come readily to my mind. But the United States historically has had very aggressive actions against Mexico, including invading Mexico and trying to whip up anti-Mexican sentiment. So that's not new. But in terms of the current context, for the past several decades, Republican and Democrat presidents have tried to deal with increasing ties with Mexico. Even George W. Bush, when he was elected in 2000, we actually thought that there might be congressional movement on a major immigration reform package. Didn't happen. So this kind of threat to the cooperation between Mexico and the United States is very dangerous and irresponsible. And I can't think of a specific context recently where it was made so obvious and so virulently stated.
Let's take some more calls. We've got Jackie in Santa Fe. Hey there, Jackie.
Hi. Something we kind of touched on throughout the show is how war plays into immigration. And I think if we're going to have a serious talk about immigration in the United States and how to fix it and help make a good legal pathway, we really need to talk about stopping wars that we've created in other countries. Because I think someone mentioned Reagan and the war on drugs and how that's led to a lot of immigration from Central and South America. And then it also goes to cover the gentleman that mentioned he wants to see veterans and citizens taken care of first. I love veterans, and I don't think we should be sending them across a sea or across any other border to fight a war that we aren't particularly involved in. Not to say that we shouldn't stand up for human rights, but when it comes to something like the drug war, it was unnecessary, and we caused a lot of violence and caused a lot of the situations that people are fleeing now.
Jackie, thanks for giving us a call from Santa Fe. Let's go to Sarah in Albuquerque. Hey there, Sarah.
Oh, yes. Hi. Am I on?
You are on.
Oh, yes. I just want to say we have 12th and Lomas open right now, the county clerk access, annex, and starting tomorrow, we're going to have 19 early voting places so we could vote the way we want, what we believe in. And so the number is 243-VOTE. 243-8683, 243-8683, and then they'll give us all of the polling locations.
All right. Thanks, Sarah. And early voting locations in the state open on Saturday, and we'll have resources posted on our website, KUNM.org. And Angela Cocherga is also with us. She's a reporter for the Albuquerque Journal. Angela, anything you want to add to this conversation?
I do, because I live on the border. I think it's important to hear from border residents. And in addition to being a journalist who's covered all these issues you're talking about for years, first of all, a big myth I want to dispel for those who have not been down to the border. A lot of people talk about the border but haven't physically been here in years, if ever. This is not a wide open no man's land with swarms of people coming across and doing what they please. It's never been a more secure area. Somebody mentioned the president did, sending troops to the border. We already have National Guard here. We also have the largest law enforcement force in the whole country, the Border Patrol, which continues to grow, lots of technology, helicopters, drones. So it's not a wide open no man's land. But the issue, the immigration issues, I think people of all political parties have, I can agree on one thing, the current system's broken, but there's been no political will to change it. The last time we saw immigration reform was in 1986, so a long time ago. The push factors you mentioned, people coming for jobs. I've been down to San Pedro Sula, Honduras, and yeah, there is extreme violence, people fleeing for their lives. And a lot of people I interviewed along the way, young teenagers, 14-year-olds, they actually had jobs waiting for them here in this country. They had people, cousins, family members, and companies. I mean, a kid risking his life to get a busboy job. So the U.S. needs labor. People are fleeing violence, but there's no will to kind of connect those dots politically.
Have you heard from folks in the area about how they feel about the National Guard being there?
I have. And the other important thing, the National Guard is not allowed to detain people. They're really in a support role, monitoring cameras, fixing, you know, serving as mechanics for Border Patrol vehicles. They do not go out and pick up anyone coming through or some of those families who are showing up at ports of entry or at border crossings asking for asylum. Their role is very limited. So some people are very much against any kind of military presence. Other people, it doesn't matter one way or the other because they're really not involved in any of the immigration enforcement jobs. That's solely the role of Border Patrol.
Let's take a few more calls. We've got Henry in Albuquerque. Hey there, Henry.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good. What do you want to share?
Good. Well, the whole immigration issue is it's a catastrophe. The way we're treating people, immigrants that are coming in, that are fleeing violence, that have jobs that are promised by these sweatshops and these factory farm operations. They like illegals because this way they can underpay, they can overwork them, and they will not complain. That's one of the issues. The other issue is the INS. I think it should be disbanded. It needs to end because what they're doing, separating children. I don't know how many are separated at these detention facilities from their families. This, to me, is a criminal action on the part of the Trump administration, and it's horrific. The whole, and one person mentioned about the wars of the 1980s and 90s, and when Hillary Clinton funded or supported the Honduran takeover and caused violence in that country and caused people to flee. Mm-hmm. We are responsible.
Yeah.
What is happening?
Henry, thanks for giving us a call from Albuquerque. And Rebecca, Henry brought up something that is a campaign cry we hear mostly from the Democrats, which is abolish ICE. I'm just curious, you know, if ICE was abolished, how would that affect your job?
Well, it would be difficult to imagine. I think that there's got to be, you know, there's questions about the restructuring, of course, of the immigration processes in 2003 in the wake of 9/11, the Department of Homeland Security was created that then created three primary sub-agencies that deal with immigration, United States Citizen and Immigration Services, or USCIS, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, and Customs and Border Protection, or CBP. The three have slightly different roles. Of course, USCIS is primarily a benefit-granting agency. ICE is an enforcement agency or a policing agency. And CBP, of course, is involved with the border and with customs. So they each have their separate roles. With a lot of the government officials that I've spoken to, they lament the fact that it has become fractured and that the institutional knowledge that was under the former INS when officers moved more freely between the functions was more effective in their view, because those that were involved in enforcement also understood the benefit granting side of things more greatly. And so while I think that the agency ICE itself is fraught with problems and right now has such a clear directive to really go into our communities and enforce laws in a way that we have never seen before, especially since the advent of the agency, perhaps if ICE was abolished, there would need to be some other venue to be able to enforce our immigration laws. I would imagine that moving back towards what the officers themselves have said, where there is more cross knowledge and sharing of information, could be a lot more effective.
Like one agency would be maybe more effective.
Right.
Yeah. Let's just squeeze in one more call. We've got David in Albuquerque. Hey there, David. We're getting close to the end.
Good morning. I just want to take a step back and aside from partisan politics and race and economics, just at a very human level, what has always driven immigration, whether it was Irish or Germans or Italians coming to the United States or other parts of the world, is a basic human desire to take care of oneself and one's family. And I think both parties have lost sight of the fact that policy considerations and getting into the weeds about labor market effects or war, the basic thing that drives immigration is people do what humans do, which is they migrate to take care of themselves and their family. It has always been that way. And the sooner that both parties start talking in a much more humane way, the sooner we're going to have real policy reform.
All right. Miriam, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I just wanted to add one comment to the idea of abolishing ICE. Is I think people don't really understand or maybe didn't focus on or forget that family separation existed before the zero tolerance policy. So the idea of abolishing ICE because of the family separations, I think it's problematic. But I do think the zero tolerance policy is what led, of course, to the increase, rapid increase of the number of children that were separated from their families. And so that's really, that's a political issue. That's not really an executive branch question.
And Christine, anything else?
Well, I would just say that in terms of the complications here, that we also have to look, we've talked a lot about federal policy, but we also have right in our midst local policies. The idea that Albuquerque is trying to stay immigrant friendly, mm-hmm. and
so-called sanctuary city.
Yes, and that's a campaign issue in Congressional District 1. And so I think that that's important. Those are the kinds of things that are important to look at local, state, and federal issues. But we've got to solve these problems, not just throw sound bites at them.
Rebecca, I'm curious if you think that the rhetoric helps or hinders the job that you do. You know, when we think about like campaign ads and things like that, you know, these sound bites that Christine was talking about.
Well, I mean, I think that in general, the job that I do right now, of course, has been made more difficult by the administration because there has been a wholesale attack not only on undocumented immigration, those who are coming across the country without permission, but also all across the board with legal immigration. So, for example, even right here at UNM with our highly skilled workers or doctors who serve our community, they are battling to be able to get lawful status here in the country in a very similar way to those that that have come in, in different ways, perhaps. So it's really the entire immigrant community. And I think the thing that is the most difficult is seeing the feeling and the sense across the board, whether or not you are a highly skilled worker or you are an indigenous individual from Guatemala, the fear and the uncertainty that impacts people and their lives, the fact that children pick up on those issues and they internalize that, that's the real failing of our country and of these candidates, is spreading that type of fear and division within our communities because it's harmful. And I do really hope that we can get to a place where we talk about, creating solutions and a more positive tone.
All right. Well, we're right at the end of the hour. Miriam, any final thoughts?
I just, I am, as a child of immigrants myself, and as someone who had the opportunity to live abroad, I recently was a Foreign Service spouse. My husband just, was serving us, our government in Guatemala. I have a lot of experience with this issue. I think it's very nuanced, and I'm hopeful that this election will lead us to a more positive place.
Well, unfortunately, we've reached the end of our hour. I want to say thank you so much to our guests, Angela Cocherga, Rebecca Kitson, Miriam Aranjani, and Christine Sierra. The conversation doesn't have to end here. You can email letstalk@kunm.org or use the hashtag letstalknm on Twitter. Leave us a comment on Facebook, KUNM Radio. And if you missed any of our show today and like to share it with your friends, you can find the audio of our show at kunm.org or subscribe to our podcast. Marino Spencer is our engineer. Bryce Dix screened your calls. May Ortega live tweeted the show. Elaine Baumgartel is the executive producer. Thanks to the D Numbers in Santa Fe for our theme music. I'm Monica Brain, and this is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.